Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today my guest is Burr Furlow, who will be bringing us his book, Compassionate Rebel Revolution, Ordinary People Changing the World. Welcome, Burr.
Hi, thanks a lot, Sherry. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be on.
Well, we're very happy to have you here. Tell us a bit about yourself and your background.
Well, I'm a journalist by profession. I graduated with a journalism degree, and I worked for many years on daily and weekly newspapers and as a freelance magazine writer and some public relations. And then some years ago, I started writing books. I've published seven books now, including two in the Compassionate Rebel series. We can talk more about those. I've also been very active in a number of organizations dealing with issues of peace and justice and social change. And what's happened is that I have merged the two together. So I tend to use my activism as research for books that I write, stories of people. I've really been focused on writing the stories of ordinary people, people we call compassionate rebels, who are doing extraordinary things to change the world. And I'm really big on gathering people's stories, giving people a chance that normally don't get an opportunity to tell their stories to do so, and then to take those stories out to the public. I've also hosted a radio show. I've done peace education, a number of other things. The primary focus right now is really all about getting stories out there for the public to see from people who are everyday heroes in our world. That's kind of my mission right now.
Where did that start? Where did you start with gathering those particular stories?
The ones that are in the book?
Mm-hmm. What started you
I've always had that path? You know, writing for newspapers, I've always had an interest in human interest stories. And what happened was about, right before 2000, actually, I was together with a woman I work with in a peace organization who has a bookstore, and we were talking about wanting to write a book about peacemakers. And so we kind of took off by finding people that we knew. I know so-and-so, and they've done wonderful work for peace. And we want to give people a chance, not the celebrities, not the famous people we all read about, but those people that we don't normally know about but who are doing wonderful work out there. So we started talking to people that we knew, and eventually other people would just kind of drop out of the sky for us. We'd find them in all sorts of places. And those stories led to the 50 stories that were in the first book, which was published in 2002, The Compassionate Rebel, Energized by Anger and Motivated by Love. Because these were people that were angry at an injustice of some sort, but dealt with it in a compassionate and peaceful and loving way. And so that book was published, and it's still out there for people to purchase or to pick up if they'd like to. We spent a lot of time because a lot of the people were local. I'm living in Minneapolis, and a lot of the people were from the Twin Cities. We took them around with us when we went to do book events and introduced them personally to audiences. And that really was very inspiring to a lot of people to actually meet the heroes that they read about and inspire them to want to go out and do something on their own. Probably 3-4 years ago, I just got to thinking that this Compassionate Rebel thing is really a revolution, a movement that involves people all over the world, and we need to try to do more stories. And so that led to the second book, Compassionate Rebel Revolution, Ordinary People Changing the World, published just over a year ago. And we've done the same thing with that. I've taken tours where we bring these people in and they tell their stories in person. really been a powerful tool for people to understand that there's compassionate rebel stories in everybody, and we just encourage people to find them and to use them to change the world. So it's kind of been a mission of mine. And finally, the last part of that, and maybe the most important part of that, is that a lot of the people that we talk to have been doing this work for a long time. Both of our books are dedicated to the young people, you know, the next generation of what we call budding compassionate rebels coming up. We're hoping to inspire people who are going to be running our country to look at these other folks and say, I can do that. I can be like them, and I can do my part to change the world. So stories change the world. Stories define our culture. Stories are critical to particularly hopeful and positive stories in a time when there's so much negative news going on in the world.
Right. Now, do you feel that when the history of the, you know, does history play a part in your storytelling? I mean, do you go back into the history and how it started in that region, or do you just talk about what's currently happening, or how do you come up with your idea?
Well, these are just a couple of things. These are oral histories. And the second book has people from all over the world in it. And so we do talk about their history. Sometimes they've been doing this work for 50 years. Sometimes maybe it's more recent than that. We always kind of start out with what influences that they maybe have in their childhood and things that led them to do what they are. What was that transformative moment that turned them from a spectator into an activist? And then we try to always place that into historical perspective of the times. You know, if they're if it involved a war they were protesting against, if it involved an environmental issue, whatever it might be, we try to place the person's history in context of the history that's going on at the time and how they have contributed to it. I've always been a lover of history. I've written some books on neighborhood history, and I'm contributing to one recently. And I really believe that we have to learn from history and benefit from history. And that's what these stories are really all about.
Because if you don't learn from history, it's doomed to repeat itself.
Yeah, exactly. That old saying about history not repeating itself. In fact, as we speak right now, there are people from our book, the two books, being interviewed by a local public television station for oral histories that will be put out for the public, and hopefully will go into the historical archives and go on the internet, and hopefully will be a TV show next year. So history is a really important part of what we're doing.
And like you
say, making sure that we don't repeat the mistakes we made in the past, and that we learn from and stand on the shoulders of the people who went before us and try to take the best lessons from them and apply them to the future.
Well, I think that's very important. What's the biggest satisfaction that you feel in completing your book?
Well, first of all, just getting it done. You know, I talk about in the introduction that publishing a book is, for me, the closest thing I can have to the experience of giving birth. I mean, it's a long, laborious process, and then finally you've got the birth of this book, and you've got it in your hand. But beyond that, the biggest satisfaction of doing this is the fact that we were able to get these stories of these people and have them out in the public. We refer to ourselves as story carriers, people who are carrying people's stories out into the public. And the fact that we are able to share some of these stories with others, hopefully inspire others to follow and to do similar kinds of work, to find their own compassionate rebel stories, I think the biggest satisfaction. I mean, I've won a couple of awards too, and that's nice, but it's really about the message of the book and that message getting out into the public. That's, I think, the biggest satisfaction to get from it.
What did you think about the Arab Spring and what was going on there?
Well, it's very interesting.
Do you think that was a positive, or from what's going on now, is it a negative?
Well, at the time, it certainly was positive. The interesting thing is, right after the book was published, the Arab Spring happened. And so I didn't get an opportunity to include it in the book. It's part of what we call the Compassionate Rebel Revolution. Everybody, you know, these people who are compassionate rebels are out there saying what they're going to say and doing it. We have one guy we interviewed in the book, Ahmed Tharwat, who has been involved in documenting that whole thing. I think the Arab Spring was very positive. Now, I realize in recent months there's been some negative disruption, which they have to settle. But the most positive thing about the Arab Spring and then what followed that, I said, well, can this happen in the United States? Well, then we had Wisconsin, and then we had Occupy, and we've had lots of other things going on like that are just really showing that average common people are standing up for what they believe in. And in some cases, like in Egypt, they were able to actually overthrow dictators and take over government. A lot of times it's not quite that dramatic. But whatever it is that people are doing that can make any kind of positive change, I think is wonderful. The Arab Spring also showed that people can organize with the new technology now. You know, with cell phones.
What do you think about how the kids who started it were good and they had a very good vision? But what do you think about the people who used it as a reason to loot and to hurt people?
You talk about Arab Spring?
Yes, in Egypt.
Well, if you look at some of the the actions that people have taken over the years in all kinds of movements and causes, there's always going to be, almost always going to be, a small percentage of agitators who will take advantage of that and use it for negative purposes, whether it's to disrupt it, whether it's to go in and do, as you say, looting afterward. Obviously, I don't agree with that. I think it's unfortunate that that happens, but I think we have to realize that it can be a side effect of a much larger cause, and hopefully, once that looting and so forth is done, we can look at the big picture and say, this really was a positive in the long run. I don't know that there's much you can do about that. If you step up the law enforcement, then you run into police conflicts and police
and brutality.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry, what?
Then you get the opposite of brutality from the government. It's
exactly.
Either the bad people that are raping and hurting women and looting stores and
exactly.
doing horrible things, beating up reporters.
Exactly.
Or you have the government coming through and are also, they try to break into a museum in Cairo and destroy
mm-hmm.
beauty and our history, because, you know, all history belongs to mankind. So
exactly.
I mean, there was really good that came from it, and it was really bad. Do you think it's because it took so long for it to happen, because it was like a week, that's why all that horror started?
Well, yeah. I mean, eventually, if these kind of things go on, that does offer more opportunities for people who are up to no good to go in and take advantage of that. But, you know, what's the solution? The solution is certainly not to stop doing these kinds of activities or events, and it's certainly not to have an over-response from government. I think each individual city or state or country has to work that out within themselves. The unfortunate thing is that when those kind of things happen, it can give a bad name to the 90% of the people who are acting positively. Even right. in the Occupy movement, you had a few, you know, wayward souls who went off and did things, and people were criticizing the Occupy movement when the majority of it was fine. You can go back to any number of events and activities that have happened in the past, and you can say a few bad apples basically have spoiled it for the barrel. And we hope that doesn't happen. We hope that people will look at the larger picture and what the long-lasting effects of that of the positive and hopeful part of it will be.
Well, I mean, I think the Occupy was a good thing, but the only thing I had an issue with, here's these people who are claiming to be good, you know, good people, sociologically, ecologically sound people, and then they mess up the areas that they're in. I mean, if they're going to do something like that, and they're supposed to be ecology-minded, they should have done stuff like had people going around cleaning the area within the group, you know, as part of the sit-in, you know, to clean the area, to have an Andy Gump there so people can, you know, have a place to go to the bathroom. They had the collective food, but they didn't seem to take it far enough that a lot of it wasn't totally thought out to me. You know what I mean? Because there was a lot of areas that were, like the park in L.A. was completely ruined from what they did.
Yeah.
And if they thought ahead and said, okay, we're going to do this and it's a good thing, let's do it all the way and protect the environment as well as making our point. And then they would have been heroes.
Mm-hmm. And that has happened in some places. I can say, in other places like here in the Twin Cities, that they've had a little better record. But again, that whole thing was so spontaneous. And as I said, you know, leaderless, so to speak. And that's not an excuse. But I think that people didn't really prepare for it very well. I think they kind of just spontaneously erupted. And then they realized later that, well, you know, maybe we should have prepared a little better and taken care of some of these things. And I think that's happened in time. But any if you look at any kind of uprising or movement or agitation or anything that people have done, there's always going to be an element to it. And actually, here in the Twin Cities, those folks were occupying a government center plaza, and they actually were there staying overnight, and the police eventually said you can't stay overnight, and you know, so they have to make sacrifices. But this is really about people. People don't have to do what the Occupy people or the anti-war, they don't have to go out on the street and protest in order to be making a difference in the world. People do this every day. In their daily lives, the random acts of kindness that they do.
That's,
you know, planning,
my favorite, is the random acts of kindness. Or what Rosa Parks did on the bus, you know. Very
exactly.
quiet, people could do good things without all the craziness that's around them. You know.
Right, quiet, doing it in a quiet way. And, you know, you see it every day, you know. People planting gardens, people doing acts of... The difference between a random act of kindness and a compassionate rebel act is that the compassionate rebel act goes further. Mm-hmm. The random act of kindness is something you do at the moment, like you might give a homeless person a cup of coffee, and that's a random act of kindness. But to make it a compassionate rebel act, you start thinking about, gee, why was that person homeless? And I should go out and maybe I can do something about that. So it's trying to take that a step further. This is why this is such a large movement, because if people don't realize or understand or don't know the name yet, But there are millions of compassionate rebels out there, people doing this kind of work every single day and not getting recognized for it.
That's
in
true.
Some cases.
Give us a taste of part of your book and what you'd like the readers to take away from it.
The most powerful part of my book are the stories. I mean, you know, there's an introduction, there's a foreword, there's there's resources at the end. The stories are very powerful. They're intimate stories, personal stories, and very inspiring stories. And when people read these, not only will they find it's a good story to read and that they're getting to meet these people and appreciate them, but to take away from that the fact that, oh my gosh, that person did this and they're no different than me. They're just an ordinary person out there, and look what they did. I can do it. You know, I can get out of the chair and go do something to help somebody or to help society. And then maybe I'll want to share my story when I've done that and help other people as well. That's what people tend to take out of this experience when they read the book or actually meet these people, is that inspiration, that empowerment, that there is hope in the world, and I can be part of making a better future for the world, if, just like these folks have.
Well, I think that's what's important, is to help each other. That's why we're on the planet.
Yeah, and I should just mention that the one of the reviewers for this book called the book a humanitarian masterpiece.
Wow.
Which means that it's all about humanity. There are good human beings out there. There are humanitarian things being done every day, and we are trying our best to find them. I mean, 100 stories is not even a tip of the iceberg, but we're trying to find them. We encourage people to write to our website, www.compassionaterebel.com, to look at the book. Also, to send us their stories if they'd like, or ideas for stories, and we'll try to get them on the internet. The book is on ebook now. You can download it to Amazon, from Amazon, and read excerpts. There are excerpts from the book on the website. It'll get people, I think, excited and interested in finding the rest of it.
I think there a lot of that stuff will be on my blog.
And also, I appreciate very much the fact that you're, Sherry, that you're going to put this on your blog. And how long will it be up there?
The blog stays up there after I do it forever. I never take them down.
Okay, wonderful. So people who haven't had an opportunity to listen to the show or want to tell other people about it, they can go to your blog. And do people know your blog?
They can go to my blog. They can go to my website. Also, they can go to the main page for Blog Talk Radio for my Chatting with Sherry page, any of those places.
So they go to Blog Talk Radio and then just put in Chatting with Sherry?
Right. And all that information will be up, so you don't have to worry about that. What are you working on now?
Well, I'm working on obviously marketing the book, trying to get it out into the internet a little more, working on getting this TV show done, documentary. I've also got somebody that wants to do a podcast of the show. It's getting out into being used in curriculum now in colleges and high schools. And so I'm in the process of trying to expand the use of the book. I'm writing some articles and stories for publications that go to audiences that might be interested in the book, such as a Peace Alliance and places like that. And in addition to that, I'm just kind of working on other ideas, maybe more personal experience kinds of ideas, and looking at maybe other story options and book options. But the most important thing right now is trying to get the word about this to a larger audience who can appreciate and identify with it. I'm also still very active in a number of organizations that work in peace and justice, and keeping that up and connecting that to what I'm doing with my writing and publishing. And this
is
a self-published
book. Is it like Amnesty International,
yes.
Things like that?
I'm sorry, what?
Is it like Amnesty International and things like
that? Well, that's... I'm active in mostly local organizations here. Some of them are statewide. In terms of my actually, you know, going to meetings and doing activities, but I'm certainly in touch with these other organizations. Around the country, and trying to connect with them and let them know what I'm doing and how it might apply to the work they're doing, and exchanging resources, and always open to suggestions. I know I've been doing some work with the Occupy people, and other opportunities that come up. I've also got onto a lot of chat rooms where other writers and publishers are, and exchanging a lot of reviews and information with people and support of each other, that kind of thing.
Will you be having any appearances for your book that you'd like to tell the people about?
I don't have anything
book signing
lined up at the present time. What I want to work on is doing some online things that people can get involved in who don't necessarily live here. I did a book tour last year. I may do another one. Would mainly be in the Twin Cities area, and I could put that information out on the blog or out on my website. But I really want to connect this. If we can do any kind of virtual or internet networking, have something. We have something called the Compassionate Rebel Cafe, which is this virtual cafe. We've actually set it up in a few places where people can come and have their coffee and sit around and tell their stories and talk about their experiences. And I want to get that Compassionate Rebel Cafe going online so that we can have people come together and talk about what's on their mind.
Well, I think that sounds like a great way to get people together. We've come to the end of our interview. I want to thank you very much. I'd like my live audience to thank Bert for a wonderful interview. Next week, I'm going to have the pleasure of interviewing Jordan Redhawk. She's an author of multiple genres, very wildly successful books, and she's one of the most popular authors in fan fiction, and we're really looking forward to talking to her. Thank you, Bert, for a wonderful interview.
Thank you very much, Sherry, and I encourage people to go to your blog or to my website at CompassionateRebel.com to get more information. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, and thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Sure.